Thank you, Yuha. All right, yeah, I'm going to offer some words. I'm going to talk about a few different aspects of this relationship between practicing with our emotional life generally, and Dharma practice. And Dharma practice broadly, and maybe more specifically, insight ways of looking, emptiness practice. So this in the last couple of weeks, we've kind of woven those threads into the exploration in a little more of a emphasized way. So yeah, just I'm pulling a few different aspects of that relationship or pieces of that puzzle, if you will, that felt alive for me as we're coming to a close with this course. So the first thing that comes to me to say is just a little bit of a kind of like emphasizing or underlining that at least from my perspective, finding the balance or finding the way to hold the connection between our emotional life and our Dharma practice, how we practice in these ways, it's going to necessarily be personal. We will have a particular kind of authority based on the fact that we have, we live our own lives, we've lived our own histories, we're most intimate with our own capacities, maybe most sensitive to what would be something that needs a little care, a little support, a little emptiness practice. How we practice at different times. We leaning into to ways of practicing that are more about offering a kind of care or bringing some ease, or leaning into these emptiness perspectives that can so powerfully kind of open what's constricted, what's solidified, what's fixated. I don't know. We have the ringside seat to our own inner life. And so like finding our way to stand there, trust that. I think it feels to be really it feels essential. And I think part of why I bring this up is, just this real awareness that we're practicing within a wonderful, rich wisdom tradition. There's so much on offer, so much of what I've received and discovered through the Buddhist teachings and the Buddha Dharma was so different, so like radical, so powerful. And at the same time, for me, it has been really helpful to reflect on the ways and to kind of recognize that, the teacher, the Buddha, the historical Buddha, where these teachings originated, such a different life than the life I have in so many ways, in terms of, I don't know, the time we live in, the ways that I have obligations and things that I wish to serve, how I express myself in this life. I'm an artist, I'm a parent, I'm a carer of my own aging parent. We're friends, we're activists, we're members of society, or colleagues, all of these things, they involve ways of relating both within the Sangha practitioners, but also to those who are outside of it. And so it's like finding this way, I don't know, finding a way to give a kind of, I don't know, permission to hold that place of authority with our own practice. I think particularly in this space, it feels really, I think it feels really essential. Certainly how we relate to our emotions, how we relate to the idea of practicing with our emotions, it's going to shift over time. There's not like one way. It's kind of a moving target as our life circumstances change, but also as depth of freedom opens for us, and also a freedom within how we relate to the emotional experience. So, it's not something fixed. And therefore, I think it even more kind of relies on this kind of orientation from within, or kind of standing within our own practice, and moving from there and not losing that. When I first started practicing many years ago, one of the things that struck me as I was receiving teachings and being in these spaces of practice, that to me, that like I felt like there is so much sanity here that is not present in the cultures that I'm finding myself in. And it feels like, it's something like I don't know what I'm doing, and it's really clear to me that these people seem to have something figured out. Yeah, in many ways, that was true, and I did. There was, lots to be done that benefited me within my practice, and also lots of wisdom. But it kind of made it harder for me to take my own authority or kind of listen to my own sense of what was really necessary. And again, particularly in this area, practicing with the emotional life. I had this experience, this kind of general sense that, like, okay, there's something here that I don't have. But I also had a sense in the early years of my practice, as I would practice in different scenes and different traditions. Probably the first 5 years of my practice life, I spent some time in a lot of time actually in the kind of Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, Vietnamese Zen, and I spent a good amount of time in the kind of Western insight meditation tradition, and also kind of scenes that were related to Theravadin practice and Theravadin communities, and then also some time in the Japanese Zen, or at least it's the way that all of these practices are showing up in Southern California. And one thing that was clear to me, and I found myself really sensitive to, was the difference in the ways the kind of emotional profile of an advanced practitioner was kind of generally presented, and how kind of teachers express themselves, kind of what was there in the culture. Probably, no, I think it's really true to say that I'm the kind of person who maybe navigates experience in a way that's pretty, where the kind of emotional sensitivity or emotional intelligence is really primary. So I would kind of understand things through that. And I got a very clear sense that, okay, in the kind of more insight meditation, Theravadin scenes, in general, the like emotional presentation, it was the presence of equanimity was like really strong. It was like that was sort of the I don't know, for me, the sense of it, there was just a strong presence of equanimity, movement of different emotions, expression of emotions, but there tended to be, I don't know, a lot of expressions of kindness, care, carefulness with the emotional presentation. And then spending time in, the traditions that came from Japan, and how that was showing up the Zen traditions. It felt to me that emotional presentation is just like really different, really quite different. It's much more like florid and kind of sharp and more variation, yeah. And it was more than once I had the experience of listening to a teacher talk or seeing a teacher, in interaction with people, and I could feel the expression of anger and, kind of rising up, moving through. It was a kind of like in general, it felt to me like it was a kind of bouncy kind of anger. It wasn't like an anger that brought with it, some ill will. It wasn't carrying some harmful intention, but it was expressed. Yeah, it was expressed in relationship. So it was really different sense of things. Yeah. And at the time, I know that for me, I was sort of trying to evaluate, okay, like what does this say about what it is to be a deep practitioner or a realized person. They're very different, expressed in these different Buddhist traditions. They're all working with, the idea of freedom, the idea of liberation. And in some ways, I was sort of trying to map my sense of like, what is a really free person? How do they show up emotionally? And, is it the case that one of these traditions has it wrong somehow? It's like this one's expressing, they've missed the mark because it's different. And someone, I didn't know from my own experience, who would be right or who would be wrong. But that's how I was kind of looking at it. It's like almost sort of looking into the emotional presentation as a way to sort of intuit kind of a depth of freedom. And this point in my practice, and even, much earlier in my practice, I realized, that's not very helpful, not a very helpful way to hold things and to look at things. It feels more helpful at this point to sort of, I don't know, really see those different presentations as a way to get a kind of confidence that these liberation-oriented practices and the teachings of the Buddhas, of the Buddha, they can open into different expressions that are that each in their own way have a kind of freedom. And that kind of freedom, the way it expresses itself, it comes from a particular context, versus trying to pick, which one's the right one, and or which one could I see myself pushing myself into, because that was also a difficulty for me at a certain point in time, practicing in a way that was more about like, how am I going to end up like looking like that? It feels very silly to talk about it now, and it wasn't conscious to me at the time, but I can see retrospectively that was there. Versus navigating from some point within my own practice, which allows you to actually you practice well. It's like your own sense of what needs to be open. What do I sense that I have some kind of compelling interest in exploring and opening, it's like kind of that navigation from within, and then kind of trusting that, freedom expresses itself, I don't know, freely. Like if it doesn't express itself freely, how free is it? Yeah, if it, something like that. So all these different ways for myself, at least, kind of supporting finding this way to stand, with a kind of confidence within my own experience and move from there. See if there's anything else I want to say here. No, I think that's good. Just to say it. No, I think that's good. I'm going to move on from here. All right. Something else to say. I don't know, a connection for me that feels very alive, both through my own practice, but also talking to a lot of people about their practice and kind of where they're at and how they're the kind of like nitty-gritty capacities they have as meditators. I think I'm quite confident there's certain capacities and development of a certain kind of subtlety of attention that comes from working in this area of practicing with the inner life that can very deeply, very strongly support other areas of practice for us. We are spending time tuning into very subtle objects, subtle aspects of experience. There are more noticeable, stronger presentations of emotional experience too, for sure. But they're all arising on, I don't know, generally a more subtle kind of spectrum, if you will. And some of what we will notice and begin to become sensitive to is quite subtle. The quality of a mind state is like such a it's a very subtle meditative object. So we begin to develop capacities to be aware of degrees of subtlety that were, not necessarily visible just through spending a lot of time in this kind of more subtle exploration. Very often, I think people find themselves practicing with their inner life and emotional life because one has to, something has arisen in the life that is just very present. And this is the right way to practice, and it's sort of what is it's what's necessary. But the kinds of skills that I've seen, just for myself, I mean, that I've understood are present for other meditators, kind of based on doing this kind of work, I think can really serve other domains of practice really, really strongly. Brahma Vihara practice is a kind of obvious one in a way. When we have this ability to be so sensitive to the inner life in this kind of like different ways, and we have the skills to maintain that sensitivity. It really changes the way we can practice metta. Really, it's almost like the whole being can come online in service of that direction of practice in a really beautiful way, a very connected way, a very, it's just there's a fullness there, I think, that comes from being in touch with our own inner life and sensitive there, sensitive to the energy body, the emotional body, what is present. Samadhi practice, in a way, quite related to that sensitivity, to the sense of the energy body, the emotional body, the kind of harmony that can come from this kind of fullness of attention. At least in the ways that, our teacher Rob taught samadhi practice, focus on energy body practice as one possibility, really central on the particular way that he tended to teach jhana practice, also involving the ability to be sensitive to these more subtle frequencies of the body, just so supportive, so central. And it kind of, once that capacity is awakened in a meditator, it's like it's there, whatever domain of practice you apply it to. I would say as well, most of the things I teach, most of the courses, they're insight courses, emptiness courses, and most of them are focused on this exploration of how experience is fabricated and becoming sensitive to clinging, releasing degrees of clinging, moving in this direction of less fabrication. At a certain point, that work necessarily becomes very subtle. Yeah. And there's obvious things that we cling to. This person's ruining my life, and I have clear thoughts about it, and I can feel the way the body is, or I hate that the way that feels, whatever. But the more subtle areas of exploration when it comes to becoming sensitive to clinging and skilled in releasing clinging, they are very subtle. It's sort of how does the relationship of clinging hold in place? The perception of something that's like just like a neutral aspect of experience. It's all something that's happening on this more subtle side of experience, yeah? And that subtlety of attention that can be developed through this kind of attention inwardly can be really strongly supportive there. So yeah, just a few connections. I don't know. It's felt to me so, sometimes at times it feels like there's a way that when people, practitioners that have like a lot that they need to process emotionally or a lot of work that needs to be done there's like a little bit of a message, like, okay, go deal with your stuff and then like come back when you're ready for the real practice. Yeah. And my experience as someone who entered into practice, practicing for years with the inner life like this, when I was ready to step into, more conventional Dharma teachings or insight meditation approaches, I can guarantee you I had a steadiness and subtlety of attention. And that's the only place it came from. Yeah, it was this kind of work. So, yeah, just to say that there's all sorts of how many Dharma doors are there? 28,000, I don't know, something, but this can be one of them. Yeah, this kind of work, it can really develop something really beautiful and really a real power of sensitivity and attention and stability of attention. Third point. I have great titles today. Point one, point two. All right. The third point, something to kind of underline again with this exploration or make a connection between ways of looking practice and practicing with the emotional life. The emotional experience or being, experience a strong emotion or even experiencing, a relatively subtle, weak emotion. This is, for all intents and purposes, this is a way of looking. Yeah, it's not one we pick up intentionally as meditative instructions, but we're in it. We're given it. It impacts the sense of how things show up. It impacts the self sense. Yeah, impacts the degree of clinging. Yeah. So all of that is a kind of, I don't know, ground for reflection and contemplation in service of our wider Dharma practice. I don't know if you guys do like pro con lists where you kind of you have a big decision to make and you kind of write like, okay, these are the things, this is what good is going to come, and this is the thing that's bad, or these are the negative possible outcomes. I used to do them, or at least try to do them very fully. I do them less now, I think. I don't know if it's because I'm like older and I'm just like pick one, or if it's my through my practice I have a different relationship to like kind of causality. But I have this very strong experience of like writing all the pros down, writing all the cons down, and saying like, all right, I'm gonna come back to this tomorrow. And then it's just like they flip, like this, that what was the pro felt to be all like the con, and what was the con felt all like the pro. None of the circumstances, facts, or details of my life had changed, but my view had changed. Something in the emotionality had changed. If it was something I was feeling anxious about, maybe the degree of anxiety or fear was heightened. And then certain things that felt like they would be advantageous became just like way too risky and definitely going to cause a problem. So another example I'll give is kind of the easy example, but it's when we're angry or we feel strongly hurt by someone. We have that kind of it's a strong emotional response in the context of relationship. Can so fully change our sense of the other person, or so fully change our sense of the situation, what it was that happened. This kind of the way this shifts, it feels to me to be so related to these kinds of principles of attention in relationship to clinging that we've been exploring. With this kind of noticing things along the central axis and some of the teachings Yuha offered, it's that same kind of contractedness happens and can impact our sense of things on the relational kind of strata of experience, or the interpersonal. So it's like someone has wronged me. I have this sense of being wronged. It's strong. There's an emotional components of that, this way of looking that will tend to cause a certain kind of narrowing through its intensity. And so as I think about that person, or I'm viewing that person, I will be selective and narrow in how I'm meeting them. So like whatever their bad qualities, or like the reasons that they did this or caused this, or that will be really present. That will be taking up a lot of real estate in the mind. My past experiences with them that may be kind of neutral, or like, okay, or even great, they'll be hidden, by that contractedness around it, the contractedness of the view, the sense of how kind of important, let's say, the situation is relative to the fullness of our lives, can get distorted by that kind of narrowing. So, it's like, this is it. This is the big problem. This is the make or break situation in my life. Whereas if there wasn't so much contraction, be like, well, this is not great, but it's in a context, a wider context of other things that are okay, even past experiences with that person that were okay. So, it's the same kinds of meditative principles we're applying with this kind of sensitivity to the emotional body, the central axis. We can play with them in the more relational domains of our experience, in ways that can be really helpful, and in ways that we can kind of do in the while we're in the difficult situation. Some kind of reflections around the ways these kind of strong emotional states or strong mind states can be seen as ways of looking. It kind of has to happen a little retrospectively. When it's super hot, it's really hard to be just like, oh, okay, way of looking, what can I learn from this? But we can reflect afterwards. We can journal about it, we can think about it, we can bring it in as a contemplation. This idea that the kind of view of a certain situation becomes contracted is something that we can actually practice with when we're really quite caught in something, and we have the intuition that a kind of emptiness perspective might be helpful here. We can, it's just, you ask yourself to contemplate what is beyond the scope of the contracted view. If you any of you have seen that freeze, it's there's a, ch a section, I think it's in chapter 9, where Rob kind of offers this possibility around working with blame, whether it's blame, blaming yourself, blaming someone else. And the name of that section is Blame as a Constriction of View, Opening the Vision. Yeah. So he shares his one possibility for kind of working this way. And I found a random guided meditation that is this kind of way of practicing on the Hermes Amara Foundation, that I'll put a link to. I'm calling it random because the title of it was guided meditation. So it was only through searching the text I found it. But I'll put a link if you don't have the book and you're interested in that. But I think that possibility is really there, sort of bringing these emptiness perspectives and these kind of principles of practice and the including more can really be helpful, bringing it onto the kind of interpersonal level or sort of the level of personal narrative. Yeah, that kind of level. So that's my third point. Not too much more to say. All right, this last piece. I'm not even sure how to title it. So maybe I began thinking as I was kind of w working on this talk and kind of, I don't know, realizing we're kind of coming to a certain point of, well, the point of ending this course, yeah. And I was thinking of something from, I think it was the second week talk that Yuha offered, where he offered kind of a couple of possibilities, and the words that he, what we may want from this practice, what may come from it, and they were confidence and agency. And I was like, yeah, I still like those. I still like those words. I like those possibilities. So just to kind of revisit them. Certainly practicing in ways that allow us to hang out, be there for our inner experience, our emotional experience, when it's pleasant, but also when it's challenging, that develops this kind of confidence. That is something that grows and builds over time, and it is a real kind of support. So I think, we've made in the talks and the way we've conveyed the practices, that possibility, I think it's just been kind of a central presence, within our offerings. Just to say we develop a confidence to kind of, I don't know, be with the difficult, be with the strong, with the strong emotions. But there's very beautiful ways that kind of confidence shows up, not just in terms of like our ability to get through it, but it becomes something that kind of supports our ability to be in relationship, certain to be in certain kind of situations, to open to people that we might feel difficulty with, yeah, but be in there a way that we can also see what is wonderful about them, or like cool or interesting. Or I was thinking about my son. Recently, and I reflected this back to him. He has an ability to have fun with pretty much any kid. It's like he has this ability to, I don't know, open to be okay with what is not great for him, and then kind of find what's good. There's something about this kind of confidence. It's like we may have had past experiences that were very, very difficult, yeah, or that have left a certain kind of mark about it, certain kind of dynamics in relationships or certain kind of situations for us, maybe even like professional situations, or where we're able to feel comfortable, where we're able to go. Certain doors can kind of close through the ways that these kind of emotional connections get made. And so it's like this kind of confidence allows for these like a kind of opening of different doors and different day in different ways over time, that kind of allow us to step, step into our life, in ways that we weren't able to, but also in like really new ways, a confidence like, well, whatever, whatever it is. It's like it's something about a kind of intimacy becomes possible. Yeah, it's a personal intimacy, but also it's this kind of intimacy with our own experience. Yeah, it has a lot of beauty. So yeah, there's some thoughts about that idea of confidence. Certainly having a kind of, tying this kind of exploration to like our big picture Dharma practice, if you will. Certainly having a confidence that we can kind of handle what arises emotionally supports us as a Dharma practitioner. Yeah. Almost everyone who's gone on retreat knows that there's a high potential for stuff to come up. Yeah. For it to be challenging, for it to be hard, or for aspects of our emotional life to present. So if you have this kind of confidence that you've developed over time, it's like, I don't know, you can engage with what is being asked of you more fully. Yeah. Or you can go a little further, or it supports a practitioner in that way. Very much, I think, on retreat, as well in periods of our practice that are just really active and dynamic. There's periods where we may feel just a strong wish to follow these the path of liberation. When we have the kind of confidence that we know how to hold ourselves if things feel different, things feel strange, I think it's so helpful. I'm gonna speak a little bit about this term agency. And on one hand, and I think this is the way I kind of related to it initially in the context of this course, developing confidence and familiarity, and also some wisdom within our emotional life, it does allow us to have the freedom to respond appropriately in the moment. Yeah, it's like I can do better. I can meet things, meet people, meet situations in a way that I feel or kind of serve my deeper sense of what I want to honor, what I want to promote, what I want to protect. Yeah, so that's very much, I don't know, related to agency. I think the confidence supports that kind of agency, but so too does the kind of freedom that comes from these like insight practices, insight ways of looking, kind of emptiness explorations within our emotional life. There's also something, I don't know exactly how to put it, but it feels that over time, there's a kind of more gradual unfolding that for me feels connected to this word agency. It's like a kind of freedom opens through this kind of work, not exclusively through it, but I feel like, finding our footing and freedom within our emotional life really supports. It's something of a more gradual shift or ways that our life becomes tuned in a certain way. That allows us to kind of live with a kind of alignment or live with a kind of harmony in this kind of like big picture way. It's certainly something I sense if I look back over, the couple decades I've been practicing. It's hard to pinpoint a specific moment. I certainly know difficult situations I handled better, yeah, in relationship to my practice. But when I look back over time, it's sort of like for me to feel what feels to be, I don't know, it's like the most kind of beautiful result of this is the way that that my life has just kind of become gradually tuned in ways that they allow me to feel authentic, to feel who I am, but I have this freedom and this agency to kind of align the energies of how I spend my time and kind of the bigger. This is like almost like the texture of my life. It feels to be more kind of harmony there. It's like more like it's a big ship changing direction, like a large vessel. It's a kind of slow movement. It's not like a quick pivot, but it's something that comes from the kind of freedom opening here, freedom opening there, confidence here, confidence there, in the small places in our lives, and also this the the hours spent on the cushion, you know, sort of like one sit at a time, there's this kind of alignment that can kind of open up. Kind of, it feels to me like a kind of harmony becomes possible between who we are and what we wish to honor. Yeah, what we value, our values, all of that. This is a quote. It's from Thoreau. It's from Walden. This is the quote. I know of no more encouraging fact than the unquestionable ability of man to elevate his life by a conscious endeavor. It is something to be able to paint a particular picture or to carve a statue, and so to make a few objects beautiful. But it's far more glorious to carve and paint the very atmosphere and medium through which we look, to affect the quality of the day. That is the highest of arts. Yeah. So there's something in that quote that speaks to, I don't know, it's something about this work. It's, you know, it's not the only conscious endeavor that impacts our life, but I think it's no small part of it. Yeah, it's like having this agency and having this confidence here. You know, in this work, we developed the ability to deal with a crisis or something that's, you know, quite unpleasant or that needs our care. There's also something about the, you know, these bigger kind of shifts and ways we can come into a kind of harmony or alignment. Like we find, what is it to live from our specificity, to live from our authenticity, but to do it with freedom. Yeah, is it something that's a more kind of gradual, kind of shifting and alignment. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's it for me, with what I want to share today. And yeah, and just really express appreciation and admiration for all of you who have taken this course and are willing to kind of step in and do this work, because it's not always doesn't necessarily sound like the funnest invitation to, you know, it can, there's something about it, but I think it's so powerful, and can really be such a, I don't know, can bring so much strength to the whole of our practice, yeah, in a really beautiful way. So, yeah, thank you.